tweet at TodaySOR.
As you know, the news on the economy so far this morning has been positive. The ESRI says it expects strong growth over the next year and a possible let-up in the austerity programme. In a few minutes, we'll be talking to economist Cormac Lucy about why, despite all of this, he has written a book saying we should pack up and leave the euro. I'm also joined from our Cork studio by UCC economist Seamus Coffey. First of all, Cormac Lucy, can we start with these ESRI predictions? Do you agree that we are likely to see healthy growth in the next 12 months?
I think we'll see some growth, and that is a big improvement on what we've had in recent years. Whether it's healthy growth or not is another matter. You know, I think there are temporary reasons for some of this growth. Global and UK growth are probably peaking right now, and we're getting a bit of a spillover effect of that. We're benefiting from the fact that things were so bad, they couldn't stay so bad, and those, you know, people were saving an awful lot, and now they're spending a bit more. That's helping things. And the EU and the ECB have helped us by cutting the interest rate on debt and by pumping money into the system. So it's welcome that we've growth. There is growth there. But when you look at GDP figures or GNP figures, they're both distorted in varying degrees by what our multinational sector is doing. And up until the last quarter of last year, domestic demand was still remaining flat. Now, speaking anecdotally to people, you know, people who are running, say, toll roads and have a real finger on the pulse of what's happening, there are clear signs things are improving, that volumes are up, and there are volumes up in other areas. But my concern is really that our overall economic figures are distorted by the presence of multinationals. And when we look at what's happening in the domestic economy, the growth, while welcome, is subdued and likely to remain so.
But isn't it the case, though, Cormac, that when you strip out the multinational effect, you're looking then at gross national product as opposed to gross domestic product? And even when you've done that, the position looks fairly rosy, or the outlook?
That would have been the case up until 5 years ago. But then there's another distortion that is affecting gross national product, as Professor John Fitzgerald of the ESRI has identified, and that is the retained profits of re-domiciled PLCs. And John Fitzgerald did an analysis a year ago, and he estimated that GNP might be overstated by 5%. As a result of that. So
there's always an on the other hand, isn't there?
There's always an on the other hand, and domestic demand might be the purest measure to look at, therefore.
Seamus Coffey, you, as I say, are an economist there at UCC. How do you view the economic outlook? Do you believe the ESRI has it right?
I think the general point about the overall macro statistics and the difficulties in interpreting them has to be accepted. But there's one statistic we can look at that isn't, in a sense, manipulated or changed by the activities of the multinationals in general, and that's employment. And we have employment growth of around 60,000 per year at the moment, a 60,000 increase during 2013, and it seems to have continued into 2014. So if you look just at the basic level of employment and growth there, I think that backs up the thesis the ESRI I have, that there is some growth in the economy. Whether it will remain as strong and continue to expand as the ESRI project is hard to know, but there is no doubt that there is growth there. And if you just want one indicator that's reflective of that, it is the overall employment figure. Now, we can't break it down and see, well, where is the employment growth, because the CSO at the moment are putting the census results from 2 years ago into their overall model, so we can't quite break it down by sector. But they are very clear that employment is growing at a rate of 3-3.5% per annum. And that is something that really wouldn't have been predicted to happen in Ireland or in any country. What generally happens is your economy recovers and then you get employment growth. Here we're seeing the employment growth, and it's beginning to come true in the tax revenue figures. There had been concerns that this employment growth wasn't in a sense real because it wasn't being seen in income tax, but the figures initially produced by the Department of Finance for March showed an increase in income tax, and then they said there was an error and that there was actually 100 million put into VAT which should have been put into income tax, and that further sort of backed up the point that income tax was performing ahead of expectations. So if we take employment and income tax, we are seeing growth in the economy.
Is it possible, Seamus, that we might be looking at less austerity than we've been fearing in the budget delivered in the autumn then?
To a certain extent, like I think the figure for budget 2015 was around 2 billion. But a lot of that, in a sense, has already been baked in already, that will come from measures that have been pre-announced. So there has been things in relation to water charges that will make up a couple of hundred million. And there are also changes in relation to pension release for income tax that have been in the pipeline for a couple of years but still haven't come into effect. They are due now to come into effect for 2015. So even if the minister does very little next October, there will be changes that will come in that will automatically improve the budgetary situation. What the ESRI are doing is looking at the income tax figures, the excise figures from new car sales, and saying, look, if these things continue, the deficit will come down. Now, it still is quite a high deficit. The limit in European terms that you're supposed to not go above is 3%, and that's where we're aiming to get to. We're aiming to get to the biggest deficit you can run. And the ESRI still say the deficit for 2015 will be 5 billion. We shouldn't be aiming for a deficit of 3%. We need to be aiming for a balanced budget or even a surplus.
I suppose that's a reasonable point, or is it, Cormac Lucy, given that we're still borrowing at the rate of, is it what, still a billion a month?
Well, it's not only a reasonable point Seamus makes, it's a legal point, because under the austerity or the treaty that we voted on most recently for the EU, we have to aim to have our underlying deficit below 1% of GDP. So 3% is the maximum speed limit, but we're recommended to have a much lower deficit. And that means further reduction in the deficit of about 2% of GDP, which is, about 4 or 5 billion. And to get €1 saving on austerity, you'll probably have to do €2 worth of austerity because of the negative feedback effects.
Nonetheless, though, and this is a point I want both of you first perhaps to address, Cormac Lucy, there does appear to be a return of confidence in the economy.
There is a return of confidence. There's really no question about that. And it's built on a number of things. One being things were so bad in 2011, 2012 that they could hardly remain that bad in terms of public confidence and attitudes forever. A second is spillover effect from the UK. A third is the fact that Mario Draghi has been a game changer at European Central Bank level. He replaced Jean-Claude Trichet. And Trichet was really a Frenchman trying to be a German, which is not a very happy thing. Draghi, on the other hand, is a Goldman Sachs trained economist. And he immediately saw that the biggest risk to the euro was that peripheral countries would be forced out by financial markets. And he moved quickly to pump €1 trillion liquidity into distressed periphery country banks, including Irish banks. And that money has filtered through in many ways. And one of the ways it's filtering through is in a return to confidence and a return to some form of economic growth.
And Seamus Coffey, is there any danger that you can see on the horizon that could somehow damage that confidence? Or is there a possibility, or when is he going to have to turn off the tap with all this extra money he's pumping in?
Well, I suppose domestically, like, a lot of the confidence has come in the fact that we simply have got through the worst of the crisis. Like, we were going to hit the bottom eventually, and people have, in a sense, seen that things have levelled out. There has been sort of what an economist would call deleveraging in the economy, and in some instances, that has reached its limit. In the household sector, the household sector has problems with debt, but since 2008, 40 billion worth of debt has been paid back by the household sector, and some of that has been short-term debt, so those payments no longer need to be made. So you're talking term loans, loans for 5 years, credit cards, etc. Households that can repay that debt have by and large done so, and there has been reductions in mortgage debt. And as Cormac says, like, Mario Draghi has been reducing interest rates for those on tracker rates, have seen benefits there. In terms of what's coming down the track, well, clearly there are problems that still have to be addressed in the Irish and in the European banking sector, and there's no doubt there could be significant speed bumps there, given the assets that remain on their balance sheets, loans to customers who mightn't be able to repay them, bonds taken from governments who are in great difficulty, and of course issues in lending to companies right across the EU. So the banking sector remains a key concern. In a sense, we know that there are problems there, and many of them just have to be addressed. In terms of the unknowns, we're not sure like where financial markets could go. Mario Draghi has done a lot, but a lot of it has only been words. He hasn't really been tested in terms of his outright monetary transactions. At this stage, it's just been an announcement. If financial markets turn, we're not sure whether he is ready to launch the big bazooka that it is that central banks have.
Now, just on that point, Cormac Lucy, you were always coming in here today, even if there was no ESRI report, because you've just published this book called Plan B, or How Leaving the Euro Can Save Ireland, is its title. Have you got your timing wrong? Maybe 5 years ago was the time to be pushing this.
Well, I think it's more a long-term project in the sense that I do think that there are fundamental flaws underpinning the Eurozone, and they will eventually lead to a fragmentation of the Eurozone. Maybe not a complete breakup, because I think it makes sense for countries in Central Europe to join together, but I do think countries like Italy, Spain, Greece and Ireland should be fundamentally thinking whether it makes sense to stay in. So the short-term weather doesn't suit this book, but the long-term climate does.
But if we were going to have a sundering of the euro or of the eurozone, surely it was going to happen at the height of the storms that we were through 3 and 4 years ago.
Well, there are two ways in which the eurozone could be forced to break up. One would be from pressures from financial markets. And certainly, while Jean-Claude Trichet remained head of the European Central Bank, it looked like that was going to happen. And that was a key reason why Irish government debt fell in such value and rose to such high interest rates. Draghi's arrival has essentially taken off the table prospects that financial market panic will cause a eurozone breakup. The second way in which the eurozone might fragment is fundamental political dissatisfaction. And that very much remains on the table. When you look at youth unemployment in countries like Spain and Greece in excess of 50%, when you look at political trends in Greece and Italy, it is absolutely... When you look at senior retired policymakers saying we need to rethink our membership of the euro in those countries, and books coming out in those countries arguing very much as I am that they should contemplate leaving the euro, then it's clear that the focus of eurozone fragmentation has shifted away from financial market threat to a political threat. And I'm trying, you know, I don't think in Ireland that we can have a credible political argument to leave the eurozone until there's a roadmap, however incomplete, that outlines what that would involve.
But by going or by joining the euro and the eurozone, we gave up the right to control our own currency, to control interest rates as well, and to set its rating, say, against sterling or whatever, against the countries of other, the currencies of other countries. So we lost a lot of the weapons or tools that can be used in a crisis. But nonetheless, what is your argument for saying at this point we should be planning to leave?
My argument is that as long as we remain within the euro, we're almost condemned always to get interest rates that are inappropriate for our national circumstances. And between 97 and 07, those interest rates were far too low. It led to a credit boom, property bubble, and all of the rest. Now we're getting interest rates and a monetary policy that is far too restrictive. The IMF head, Christine Lagarde, a former French finance minister, has only recently criticised the eurozone for not realising the deflationary threats it faces and doing something about them. The second reason I think we should leave the euro is that it locks us into a currency that is overvalued. If you do the sums, you know, the old punt was worth 1.27 euro, and you take the current euro sterling rate, the old punt today is worth £1.05. And reading the National Competitiveness Council report from last week, they said we have the third most expensive eurozone country, or we are the third most expensive eurozone country for goods and services. So we're 6 years into a depression and we're still too expensive. And there are two ways we can cure that. We can either cure it through internal devaluation, which is more austerity, more belt tightening, more pay restraint, or we can try and do it in one fell swoop by an external devaluation, by adopting a new currency and allowing that find its own level in the way, for example, sterling has. It's fallen 20% against the euro since 07. So devaluation is not a sin. It is a valid policy tool. And we are out of policy tools to stimulate our economy. That is one of the last tools we might have available.
Seamus Coffey, is this a route that you would support?
Not at all. I think the ship for leaving the euro has left. It was a viable policy option. I think back towards the end of 2010, when the Irish banks owed 180 billion to the ECB, I think no doubt, although it's probably not recorded officially, I think there can be no doubt that there was within the corridors of power thoughts that leaving the euro would be beneficial, because leaving the euro would impose massive, massive costs right across the economy in terms of the price of imports. Savers would have the value of their savings reduced. So there would be massive cost to leaving the euro. But back in the late 2010, there would be massive benefits if we'd left, we could have simply told the ECB, we're leaving the euro, we owe you 180 billion, go off and do something else with it. So, and that's, I suppose, part of the reason why Jean-Claude Trichet would, in a sense, have bounced Ireland into a bailout, because he'd have done the sums himself and would have said, look, these lads have an opportunity to gain here by exiting, let's tie them into a long-term programme. So it would have been a viable policy option back then, but such has been the improvement since then that the costs which remain now dwarf the benefits, which have massively dwindled. If you look at the Irish banks, they now owe in total about 40 billion to the ECB. It's still a lot, but the cost that such a move would impose would dwarf that amount. Cormac mentions like the devaluation and the benefit it would have on exports. I think it must be remembered that 90% of Irish exports are done by the multinational sector, and by and large they're not affected by exchange rate movements, because most of them are either internal transactions between companies. They manufacture the pharmaceuticals here and ship them to their wholesale or distribution units elsewhere, or they already happen in other currencies. So Google are selling their advertising in sterling or in euro or in Australian dollars, etc., from Ireland. So a change in the Irish currency isn't going to affect those. So I think the benefits of an external devaluation are limited. Yes, it would benefit food exporters, but they remain quite a limited amount of our overall exports. And then on the import side, the price we'd pay for oil, for machinery, consumer goods, even the food we import would shoot up, and people on fixed incomes would suffer massively.
Cormac Lucy, essentially the big point against this, or the big argument, is we missed the boat.
Well, I don't think we have missed the boat. I think even if all of our debt problems were solved, even if we went back to 1997, by being in the euro, we are pre-programmed to get inappropriate interest rates. And the imbalances will rebuild in some other country, in some other way, but in a similar fashion.
Can I ask you just one, I suppose, about one personal reflection you might have? You were at the heart of government during a long stretch of that period. You were an advisor to Michael McDougall, was it from 2002 to 2007? Were you shouting this not from the rooftops, but within the corridors of power?
I was. I wrote about it in a report to Michael. I wrote about it under a pseudonym in McGill magazine. I resisted the very emotional implorings of my wife to buy a house. But, I mean, why should Michael McDougall pay more attention to me than to his own brother, Moore McDougall, who was arguing a rather similar message?
Was anybody listening to you, or was it a case that there was a groupthink and nobody wanted to know?
Well, if I go down to Copperface Jack's at 1 a.m.
That's a well-known nightclub, for those who are not aware. Go on.
If I go down at 1 a.m. tomorrow morning and I hand out alcohol awareness leaflets, I may be intellectually valid, but nobody particularly wants to read that thing at that time. Whereas if I go to the patrons of Copperface Jack's tomorrow at midday, they may be much more receptive to my message.
Well, they may not be looking for anything other than a cure at that stage, and it mightn't involve non-alcohol. But however, there we leave it. Cormac Lucy, author of that book, Plan B, How Leaving the Euro Can Save Ireland, and also Seamus, thank you very much indeed, Seamus Coffey, UCC economist in our Cork studios.